I am a sucker for a good mobile game, but I have some requirements. It's got to be fun, it's got to keep my ADHD engaged, it's got to be aesthetically pleasing, and it helps if it's free to play. For me, Two Dots always delivers. I've been playing this game off and on for years, and there's a reason that I keep coming back. The rules are pretty simple. Clear the objective by removing at least two dots of the same color to make a move. I'm a big fan of making squares to clear the board of entire colors. And with over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, there is always something to keep me engaged. Specially designed challenges, events, game modes with their own unique set of gameplay and adventures like the scavenger hunt, treasure hunts, arcade, flip, pinata parties, daily quests, square race, dots race, and Marlene's Lair. It is a dopamine-fueled dream come true. The art is cute and colorful, you can link your socials and compete against friends or the entire world, and there are tons of uniquely designed challenges, game modes, and levels to choose from based on whatever adventure you're feeling that day. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Come play with me and download Two Dots now for free on Android and iOS. Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates to debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, scams, and multi-level marketing. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. I am very excited. I know I say that every single time, but this interview is going to be incredible. I have the amazing Tamara Rubin, who you may know as Lead Safe Mama. And we're going to talk about not only those paparazzi tests that we're seeing all over, but we've got some boo tests and we just got some heavy metal education that I think is really important. And you guys need to hear it. So please welcome to the show, Lead Safe Mama. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you. You're incredible. Absolutely incredible. Your research is phenomenal. How did you even get into being Lead Safe Mama? Like, where did your story begin?
Okay, well, I'll do the abbreviated version. But the main thing is that my kids were poisoned in 2005. So in 2005, we lived in a historic home, in a historic neighborhood, in one of the fancier neighborhoods of Portland, Oregon. And we hired a painting contractor who was working on some of the million-dollar homes in the neighborhood. And we had like the tiniest house in the neighborhood, and the rest of the neighborhood was like Nike executives and stuff. So I said, well, if these painters are working on these really fancy houses, they must be great. They had like 20 guys and they all had like matching shirts and they had trucks that matched, you know, with the logo. And I hired them to repaint our house. And he told us he was certified in using lead safe work practices and renovation. He lied. I didn't find out later until afterwards that he'd taken the certification test either two or three times. I can't remember right now. And he had failed every time he took the test. And instead of using lead safe work practices, he used an open flame torch to burn the paint off the outside of our house. And he also told us, because he said he was using lead safe work practices, that it was okay for me to stay home with my 7-month-old baby because he was only working on the outside of the house and we were going to be on the inside of the house most of the time. And he said it was okay for us to watch things as long as we stayed at a distance. So I was home with my baby and he burned the paint off the exterior of our house. The fumes permeated the house and my relatively newborn kiddo inhaled the lead fumes and became acutely poisoned. And so what happened at that time was there was no education for families that were in crisis, very little available. And all of the education information I found on the CDC's website appeared to be biased. And there was a huge focus on it being low-income minority families that were lead poisoned. And so I didn't even know my kids were lead poisoned at first. I just thought they were sick and they wouldn't test my kids for over 2 months after they were poisoned because we were white and middle income. And in Oregon at the time, which was 16 years ago, they were only testing low-income African-American and Hispanic families for lead. And then they have this myth, false perception that, hey, look, we're doing all the testing of the right demographic that should be lead poisoned and no one's lead poisoned. So we don't have a lead poisoning problem in Oregon. Well, the fact of the matter at the time was that With gentrification, unfortunately, but also fortunately, a lot of the lower income minority families had moved to the outskirts of town to newer construction townhomes and apartments that were built in the 80s and 90s and didn't have lead. So they were testing the demographic that the government said had lead poisoning, and they were finding them not to have lead poisoning. And they were telling people like me who were living in the old lead painted houses, oh, you don't need to test because the government says you're not a risk for lead poisoning. So finally, after my kids were sick for two and a half months, I said, you have to test them for everything. And they tested them and found out they were acutely lead poisoned. And they told us we had to move out of our house and immediately with the clothes on our back. So I then started down this path of like, how is this possible that I'm, you know, a smart college educated woman who has been a parent at that time. I'd been a parent for 9 years and I'd never even heard or had any education about potential lead poisoning. I mean, in retrospect, we need to be educated about potential lead exposure while we're in the hospital with our newborns or, you know, in prenatal classes. That needs to be like one whole prenatal class needs about be about lead exposure. And when one thing I want to just say too, is that a lot of people say, well, what about BPA? What about mercury and all of that? And I ended up making a documentary film because I have a background in the performing arts. And I said, you know, the best way to tell this story, to get it to families, is to make a movie. Just to tell other people's stories, to tell stories of lead poisoned families around the country. Kind of, you've seen the impact of that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It makes a difference when you tell a story and when I make it personal. And I knew that that would have that impact. And so I went down that path because I knew we needed to educate families in a fundamental, visceral, emotional way about this issue. And then I learned more and more about what we weren't getting, what information was politically distorted, what information was influenced by industry. And so then that's when I decided to, you know, start a nonprofit and make the movie. And then it's hard to say what happened from there, but I won several awards for my advocacy work. And in 2009, I started doing consumer goods testing. And I started testing toys and vintage things. I got trained and certified in using an XRF instrument. Then I ended up doing an event with Bernie Sanders in Flint, Michigan, and during the 2016 election. I opened for Aaron Brockovich during a presentation here in Portland. And then because I was like getting so high profile, I ended up, I don't know exactly what happened, which we still don't know what happened, but someone made an anonymous fraudulent complaint, a false complaint, and tried to take down my work. So for the last 6 years, I've been in a legal battle defending my work, and I'm currently suing the state of Oregon in federal court for multiple counts of civil rights violations against me for this whole campaign that was initiated to apparently intentionally dismantle my advocacy work and the impact that I was making.
Wow. So for everybody that's listening right now, I think what I'm about to say is what they're thinking. You are a badass. Seriously, you are a badass.
When I was illegally arrested while sitting in my kitchen homeschooling my son, and my older son said, "Mom, you are a true badass. You are a real activist now that you've been illegally arrested for crimes you did not commit." I'm like, okay, all right, I get that. That hasn't felt that way, but hey, you know, okay, I'll try that on.
Wow, that's incredible. So for people listening right now, they're going, wait a second, lead poisoning in children. What did the lead poisoning look like in your young children? So maybe somebody out there that's experiencing something, you know, has some information.
Well, I have to say first that the most common symptom of childhood lead poisoning is no symptom at all. So that's not something to look for, unfortunately, because of the way our world has been shaped around public health. Your best bet is to get a blood level test when your baby is 7 or 8 months old before they start to crawl, ideally. And then again, after they start crawling, maybe when they're 14 months. And that's different than the public CDC or EPA recommendations. I recommend before crawling or after crawling so you can get a baseline, hopefully find out that they're not poisoned. But if your baby is poisoned at 7 or 8 months, like mine was, then you have that immediate opportunity to take action. And then babies are mostly poisoned by dust on the floor in older homes, that lead containing dust. And so getting that blood level test after they start crawling is a really good time. So that said, my kids were acutely poisoned in a moment, in a day, from inhaling leaded fumes. They were violently ill. Some of the symptoms are, you know, GI distress. They had diarrhea and constipation because their GI systems shut down. They had headaches. They were irritable. My three-year-old stopped talking. He, you know, his speech completely regressed. My 7-month-old, eight, 9 months, had started eating solids, stopped eating solids. He ended up not eating solids until he was 3. So basically I ended up like unintentionally becoming, you know, a model La Leche League member, even though I wasn't, you know, because I nursed my baby till he was 3 because he refused to eat solids and I needed him to get nutrition because it was lead poisoned. So, you know, so there's a lot of different symptoms that could happen, but they also seem to look to most people like normal terrible two symptoms, you know, irritability, food refusal, changes in speech. But and those aren't the major impacts. The major impacts are on frontal lobe development. So what happens is lead biomimics calcium in biological structures that, you know, in animals and humans, because humans are animals. And so when you have a high calcium component of your body developing, the body absorbs the lead in the place of calcium. So in the case of my baby at the time, his brain was developing. So he absorbed lead in the place of calcium for his brain development. So his diagnosis that he didn't get until he was 7 years old was brain injury due to lead poisoning. And then my other child, who was 3 years old at the time, his adult teeth were developing. And while he also has brain issues and learning disabilities and ADHD and other physiological issues, his adult teeth were developing because all of his baby teeth had come in. And so when he started having his adult teeth erupt, they all were having cavities. Like he had his very first visit, and we brushed teeth, were very strict about these sorts of things, but his very first visit to the dentist, I think he had 12 cavities. And that's like, wait, how did that happen? Well, that happened because the lead was absorbed by his developing teeth in the place of calcium. And so a kind of shorthand way to say that his teeth grew out soft and not fully developed. And so there's lots of different impacts. The most traumatic ones are the learning disabilities and behavioral issues, but also you end up having a compromised immune system. So you're more likely to be susceptible to other health concerns. So this whole COVID thing with my son Avi has been very complicated because he's very medically fragile as a result of his lead exposure as a baby. He also developed severe plaque psoriasis when there was no history of that in our family. And that's like the lead was a trigger for possibly a pre-existing condition or a genetic inclination. And then, you know, the lead made it happen. Another thing that a lot of, unfortunately, not all of these symptoms are causally linked to lead exposure, although the ones that are causally linked include increased risk of heart disease, increased risk of kidney failure, reproductive disorders, inability to conceive, erectile dysfunction that we discussed on our chat, and low birth weight in newborns, even at very low level exposures. So, and we're talking about like a lifetime of impact. So that's why you won't necessarily know if your kid's sick, if that's going to have any problem, you know, if they're going to have any problems from that. So that's why it's good to get your kid tested, even if you don't expect or suspect lead exposure. I also recommend people get their kids tested even if they live in a new construction home, because you never know where that lead exposure might come from. And the advantage is to have a baseline so you know whether or not your child's been exposed later. So you get your 9-month test, the kid's negative, woohoo, celebrate. And then you go to your grandma's house for a weekend and there's lead everywhere and you're like, oh shit, I don't know if he had an exposure. You can get a test and you'll know, is it different than his last test?
Wow. In your documentary that I got to watch, thank you so much for sending me that link. You mentioned that 1 in 3 children before like what, the age of 5?
Well, actually, no, it's so okay. So here's the interesting thing. So I filmed a lot of the documentary and I cut it together years ago. And I've been saying now after analyzing the CDC data, the CDC at the time was saying there were 300,000 children with lead exposure. And when I'm like, where did they come up with that number? And then I looked at the numbers. I'm like, no, actually, we know there's no safe level of lead exposure. We know that a blood level of 1, 2, or 3 actually can cause more damage than a blood level of 5, 6, 7, or 8, 9, or 10. The first blood level points are more damaging because the body doesn't try to expel the lead. So the body tries to absorb it and use it. And so those are the ones, the first exposures have more biological impacts. So if we look at children who are a blood level of 2 or higher, and if we consider a child to be anyone under the age of 18 who ever had a blood level of 2 or higher, then we're looking at 22 million children and not 300,000 or 500,000 kids, which was the statement of the CDC. Well, the interesting thing is, guess what UNICEF came out with in the last 2 years? They made this surprise bomb announcement. 1 in 3 kids in the world have been exposed to unsafe levels of lead in their life. I'm like, duh, I've been saying that for a decade. And that just is just more of this, like, and again, we chatted about this, but it's like, I've put this energy into researching and trying to understand this. And then it becomes kind of in the public consciousness, and then somebody else makes this discovery. And that's happened quite often. Like my son, who was lead poisoned, started playing trumpet, and I decided, huh, I should test his trumpet mouthpieces. And I did this whole piece about how trumpet mouthpieces have unsafe levels of lead for student horns. Well, then like 4 years later, I think it was the Centers for Environmental Health or some big nonprofit did this expose about how trumpet mouthpieces have unsafe levels of lead, and they just discovered it. And I'm just like, okay, you're on my mailing list. You know, I'm the one who discovered that. I wrote about that. And it's not that I want credit for fame or anything like that. I just want credit because, like, you know, we need to build each other up. Women need to get credit for what they're doing, because otherwise people say they're cracks, you know, that they don't have any legitimacy because for example, I don't work with a lab. I don't have a science degree. The science that I'm doing is completely legitimate. I'm trained and certified in doing what I'm doing. And there's been at least 10 occasions where I came out with statements and a body of work, and then 3, 4, 5 years later, a nonprofit or public agency or other group of people did the same studies I did and showed what I, you know, proved was the case. The big one was fidget spinners. So I found lead in fidget spinners in 2017. And that was semi-viral, and none of the news would pick it up because I'm just a mom in Oregon, which is BS. So then a few months later, the United States Public Interest Research Group, USPIRG, did a study where, oh, wow, look, they studied the exact same fidget spinners I tested, and they found them to have lead. And so they announced that they found lead in fidget spinners. And luckily, when they talked to CBS This Morning about this, they said, CBS This Morning asked the question, well, how did you get the idea to test for lead in fidget spinners? I'm like, oh, well, Tamara Rubin in Oregon did it. And so luckily, that was like the one time I got credit for my work. But, you know, it's been frustrating because, especially after the efforts to delegitimize my work through these attacks from whomever made the attacks in 2016. It's frustrating because if my work is not seen as legitimate, then a 2, 3, 4 year gap, 5 year gap happens between, you know, me finding out something and people seeing this as a problem and actually doing something about it. Now, I'm not blaming here, but as part of the problem is that there's no that the social media reach of my work is not out there making that impact. So for example, this is a perfect example. I tested the paparazzi jewelry 2 years ago, and now they're testing the paparazzi jewelry and they're finding, hey, guess what? Tamara's tests are right. Yay. Okay. Why didn't this get traction 2 years ago? I don't know. You know?
It's really wild. I mean, paparazzi's in the spotlight right now. So I think that's definitely one of the reasons why your research is coming back. I was sharing some of your research on Twitter. Becca actually was like, you need to talk to Tamara. And I messaged you about a week or so ago, right after I edited Tracy's episode, because in the episode, she had told me that they had sent testing out. And I was like, oh, I need to talk to Tamara. I'm really interested to see if their testing matches. Of course it's going to. And of course it did. I love that we have multiple testing sources over multiple years, because it proves that we're not crazy. and yeah. that these are actually, it's actually happening. If you don't believe Tracy, check out Tamara. Tamara's got it too. And they're not related. Tamara didn't sell paparazzi. She's not just a hater. You know what I mean? And so like when I reached out to you, I was like, we need to have you on the show. We need to talk about this. And you also tested Boo. And it, for me, I want to use 2022 to expose as much toxic MLM product as we absolutely can, because numbers and science is not going to lie.
Yeah. And I think that's, and I just also want to say that it's not ego driven. It's not about me getting credit for me getting credit. It's about, by not giving my work credibility, there's a gap in protecting people from these hazards. And, you know, I mentioned my big soapbox right now is that I've found just in the last few weeks, 7 different types of glass baby bottles being sold on Amazon, and they're painted with lead paint. And I want this information out there so babies aren't poisoned. I want this information out there so people know that they need to be suspicious of their glass baby bottles and that there's a potential health impact. And yes, there's a study that shows that lead on glassware is potentially harmful to consumers. And yet there's no traction because there's a lack of credibility because credit isn't being given where credit's due. So it's really important to me that we all use really good science, first off, and that we give space for these findings that are new when they're new without being overly skeptical to the point of dismissing. Like, healthy skepticism is fine, but like, okay, why has she found these findings? What is the proof behind it? And who, what does she have to get from announcing these findings? Now, I really am excited that that the paparazzi, what do you call them? Consultants, like ex-consultants.
The crown crew.
And I don't know what any of that means, so you need to tell me. But I'm really excited and happy that they did this testing. I'm really happy that it's getting the traction that it's getting now. That they're, and I wouldn't ever want to take that away from them. I think that's amazing. And I also think, you know, they've been damaged by this more than anyone. And I think that's important. But I also think it's super important that we all take a crash course in being rigorous about our scientific speaking. It took me, and my kids were poisoned 16 years ago. So it's taken me 16 years to, you know, learn and regurgitate this science in a way that is accessible to others. And it's going to take them a while to kind of get the distinctions. But I think that's the thing that we need to focus on the most right now is giving these people, these other moms, paparazzi, former salespeople, the scientific knowledge to speak about the findings so that they're not ridiculed, so that they're not, so what they've said on camera isn't taken apart piece by piece in the way that it could be. So that's why I wanted to do this, to make sure we have some rigorous scientific speaking so that anything that comes out of anyone's mouth about this is unassailable and unquestionable, because that's going to get you a better outcome in any legal entanglements over this issue.
Absolutely. When Tracy sent me those results, I was like, I don't know what this means. Like, I have literally no idea what any of this is. I don't deal with this. You know, I didn't understand like micrograms or anything like that. I did get a little more education watching your documentary and talking to you. But because these findings are almost identical to what you found, let's talk about these, what it means, and why it's dangerous. These heavy metals, the things that, and even you've tested things that the Crack the Crown people didn't test, like mercury. So what we found in these pieces of jewelry that are being advertised as lead-free and nickel-free, That's the main thing here, okay? If you're going to sell me $5 jewelry and be like, there's probably lead in this, then that's the risk I'm taking. When you take that away and say, oh, hun, trust me, it's totally free. It's totally fine. Don't worry. Let me ask paparazzi. Paparazzi, oh, you said it's fine. Paparazzi says it's fine. It's fine. That's the problem. That's the problem. So yeah. Let's talk about those findings and what they look like.
I have found, lead, arsenic, mercury, cadmium, antimony, and a little bit of nickel. It's funny because I published that first post that I wrote about it in 2 years ago, and I said nickel free in the headline, but it really had like 30 parts per million nickel, which is almost nickel free. And I wasn't focused on the nickel, you know, so much as the cadmium, given it was almost 300,000 parts per million cadmium. So the concern is that, like you're saying, there's false advertising. Like that should be the first concern, but I really can't stress enough. And I don't know your audience, so I don't know how this lands, and I want to make sure it lands carefully and well thought out, but the home test kits they're using don't work. And this is not me trying to discredit them. It's me trying to educate. These home test kits that come in a little tube with a bunch of little Q-tips are, one, a knockoff of the actual home test kits that we know work. I've met the inventor, the woman who invented these. She invented them to test for lead paint in houses. They have a low threshold of detection of 600 parts per million lead. So if it's below 600 parts per million lead, it's not likely going to find it. They also have a, and that's for the legitimate ones, not the knockoff ones. They also have an issue where they are reacting with a zinc substrate, because zinc and lead have a lot of similar properties. And again, I don't know all the science on why the zinc and lead are reacting similarly, but hold on, my husband's bringing me a package. Somebody sent me a baby bottle or something, I don't know. The issue is that it's harmful that these paparazzi folks are using these reactive agent home test kits, because if we were going to take that to court, it wouldn't hold up. The tests are not legitimate, and they're actually giving them false positives. The only time those test kits, and not the knockoff ones, but the regular ones from 3M, are useful is when you're testing for lead in paint. Every now and then they might be helpful. If like, if you know something is metal, and I have an example of this on my YouTube channel, but like if you're testing the lead lines in a piece of leaded glass, you know, it's lead. It's like 90% lead, and you rub it on and it'll turn bright pink. Well, yeah, that's a different situation. These jewelry pieces, and this is kind of a bomb that your readers or listeners, sorry, aren't going to want to hear, but these jewelry pieces, while they are testing for lead, some of them, I have not yet found one that is high in lead or high enough in lead to set off a reactive agent home test kit. So said another way, my lead levels that I found using XRF technology, which is the same technology used by the Consumer Product Safety Commission to test consumer goods for metals, has found levels consistent with the levels that Tracy found, right? The Crack the Crown crew. And so those levels were all in like the 30 to 110 parts per million range. There is no way that 110 parts per million in the substrate of a piece of jewelry is going to set off a reactive agent home test kit. So all the positives that people have been publishing about are not real positives. And that's kind of why I didn't pay attention to this initially. Like, oh, this is like a big thing. I'd have to explain these poor women. They're going to be mad at me that I'm telling them this testing they're doing is not real. But
definitely not mad. You're the expert, and we want to be able to know exactly what to do and like how to test at home. Is there a way to test at home? You're saying that like these tests really aren't going to pick up anything that is less than 600. So it's possible that the things you're testing that are coming back lead-free could have lead in them because it's not picking it up, right?
Right. That's the other problem. It's possible things that you're testing that are coming out negative might have lead, might have low levels of lead. And so, yeah, the home test kits are a total waste of money. Don't waste your money. Stop doing them, period. There is no way for you to test the paparazzi jewelry for lead or any other metal at home. It's just not something you can do, unfortunately. And it makes me sad about how much money's gone into testing these things. And so this is not to say we don't have a problem here. We do. But just exploring the lead rabbit hole here, the other concern I have is that I noticed in the video the other night, you mentioned symptoms. You talked about symptoms from the different metals. And it's very unlikely that anyone has detectable lead exposure from wearing paparazzi jewelry. It's also very unlikely that anyone has symptomatic expression of lead exposure from wearing paparazzi jewelry. So the science behind that is at 100 parts per million, it's probably bound in the metal. It's not wearing off onto your hands. It's still lead, and they're saying it's lead free. So the claim with lead is false advertising. And the claim with nickel is it's very unlikely that you're going to have symptomatic expression like blistering or whatever on your ears from wearing jewelry that has 40 parts per million nickel. When they are saying nickel free, unfortunately, usually that means low level nickel. No nickel stainless steel, for example, tends to be about 2000 parts per million nickel. It's less likely to have a reactive symptomatic expression from your exposure to that, whether or not that's a pot or pan or whether or not that's a pair of earrings. So when you have a reaction to nickel, that's normally because most stainless steel, contrary to the no nickel stainless steelers compared to that, test positive for about 80,000 parts per million nickel. So normal stainless steel is 80, sometimes 90,000 parts per million nickel. And I'm not finding that in the paparazzi jewelry. The nickel levels that I'm finding are like 40 parts per million. So 40 parts per million versus 80,000 parts per million, that's a big difference. So it's very unlikely that you're having a symptomatic expression that would be a reaction to the nickel found in the paparazzi jewelry. Did all that land clearly?
Yes.
Okay.
What is your biggest concern? If it's not really lead and nickel, because there's not nearly as much to really cause a problem, what is the biggest concern that you're seeing in this jewelry then?
Yeah. So let me just say one more thing about the lead, and that is the amount of lead that's considered unsafe and illegal in an item manufactured and intended to be sold for children is anything 100 parts per million or higher in the substrate, which is the base metal, or anything 90 parts per million or higher in the surface coating. So the levels, the few pieces that maybe you're testing around 100, 110, they're marginally within the safe range of an item for children, with the margin of error of testing and the fact that it's probably substrate reading through and there's some sort of chrome coating and all of those things. So knowing that, that doesn't mean this jewelry is safe. So then that opens up takes the false advertising conversation. So, okay, yeah, they said lead-free, nickel-free. It's not lead-free and nickel-free. Some of them are, not all of them. But the lead and nickel levels are so low that they're not necessarily a concern. But what did they mean? What was the legal intention, the sales intention behind these lead-free, nickel-free labeling? Well, the intention behind it is clear that these are non-toxic. I forget if there's language on the website that said things were non-toxic. I think we did some screenshots. I can't remember. Do you remember?
It used to say lead and nickel-free. That is no longer on their website. I'm not sure about a non-toxic claim though.
Okay. But people, you can easily assert that in public consciousness, people are buying lead-free, nickel-free jewelry because their understanding is, oh, it's non-toxic. It's safer for me. It's healthier. So by asserting these lead-free, nickel-free claims, you're basically having really good greenwashing. You know, it's like people are buying it because they think it's healthy and safer. So then that gets into, okay, but what's really in the jewelry? And that's when things get scary. In that the cadmium levels and the mercury levels and the fact that there's even any arsenic at all is really quite concerning. So the cadmium level in the first piece I published about was like 265,000 parts per million cadmium. And they're not saying their jewelry is cadmium free. So are they liable for the fact that they're selling you cadmium lace jewelry? I don't know. You know, that's going to be a hard one to prove in a legal environment. And because they didn't say they were cadmium free and they had to use something if they weren't using lead and nickel as a base metal. So they used cadmium. Well, I'm really curious to test some of the children's jewelry. I was told that they were selling jewelry for children. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with everything that paparazzi sells, but I have been told that there is a children's line of jewelry. I'm not sure. And I'm also assuming that if you're, you know, like if you have a baby and you're wearing a dangly piece of jewelry, there's a possibility that if you're holding your baby might be holding that jewelry, putting it in their mouth, touching it, then putting their hand in their mouth. So like that's even an issue too, but I don't know exactly what is and isn't marketed toward children in paparazzi.
So the question is, has any of their children's jewelry tested positive? And if people want to send me some of their children's jewelry that they know for sure was sold as children's jewelry, that's your best angle for getting them, for, you know, getting paparazzi for breaking the law, because there isn't a law about total cadmium content or total arsenic content or total lead or mercury content for jewelry made for use by adults. There's no law. And so that was a miscommunication by Tracy and crew in her video. They didn't understand the specifics of the law. Now, there's exceptions in California and there's exceptions for children's jewelry. And there may or may not be an exception in Washington state that you can pursue. Becca might have more about information about that. And there's an exception in Denmark. I'm assuming it's mostly America that this has been, United States that this has been sold. So we probably wouldn't be able to talk to the Danish government. But if any was sold in Denmark, that would be great, because Denmark has a limit of 75 parts per million cadmium. And they have a really fun study. They were concerned about cadmium in sex toys. So they were looking about at what level of cadmium should be permissible as potentially migratable from silicone dildos. And so that's where they came up with that 75 parts per million number. It's a fun study.
The things we learn on this show.
So they came up with that because they were like, they actually replicated vaginal environments and put this silicone in these fluid environments that replicated the vagina. And they found out that over 75 parts per million cadmium would be considered unsafe. Then the state of Washington has a limit, I know, in items intended for children, including cookware. And they're the only location, state, country, or that I'm aware of that has a comprehensive limit that includes cookware and dishes, that anything over 40 parts per million cadmium is illegal. And that's the only state that has like a non-migratable cadmium limit. The federal cadmium limit for jewelry, which is possibly the most relevant standard, is 300 parts per million. So if it's a child's jewelry, only if it's for children, and if it has more than 300 parts per million cadmium, it's considered illegal to be sold as an item intended for use by children. That's why I need to test. You guys need to test. Everybody needs to test. Send me to test any of the children's jewelry, because if we can find even one piece of children's jewelry that's high in cadmium, then we have a hook for legal action. Outside of that, the testing that we've all done is alarming, because we know that 300 parts per million is unsafe and illegal. And the reason they've set that standard, well, let me take a step back. So because testing for migratable heavy metals is very expensive and out of the scope of what most people are able to afford or do, they have instead set limits for XRF detectable total content levels, because that's easy to do. I mean, what I do is relatively easy. You just have to own an instrument that costs between $30,000 and $50,000, and, you know, zap the thing with the instrument, and you have to do it in a way that, you know, you make sure there's no exterior contamination. I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier. So you can test for total content. So because it's easier to test for total content using XRF technology, they've set these limits with the assumption that if it tests for total content above that limit, it's likely that there's a possibility of migration that could cause human harm, you know, human health impacts. So the limit has been set for children's jewelry at 300 parts per million for cadmium. So what we need to understand from that is children are human. And just because we've set a limit for children doesn't mean that limit shouldn't also apply to adults, but it doesn't. But if we know there's a potential for human health impacts at levels above 300 parts per million with children, then we can assert, and this is with all toxicants, all heavy metals, that that there's likely human health impacts at levels above 300 parts per million for any human, regardless of their age or size. So that's where we get, it's like, it's a leap. from the law, because there's no law protecting adults. And so in my work, I'm always talking about what the levels are for children. Like in a post, they'll say, oh, well, a 90 parts per million is unsafe or illegal for children for lead. And, you know, but the reason I say that is because there's no total content law for items intended for use by adults. And there should be. And so, okay, now we're really in the weeds here, but what I'm trying to get at is fundamentally, the focus of my work is that we need to change these legislative standards, these mandated standards, to apply to all humans, not to just apply to children, because that's been proven by science. Okay. So that the human health impacts have been proven by science. So then we're talking, okay, get back to paparazzi. 300 parts per million is toxic to children, mandated legally, all those things. And you have these jewelry pieces that I found at close to 300,000 and that Tracy and Crack the Crown crew found at like 700,000, 800,000. So obviously 800,000 is more than 300. And 300,000 is more than 300. And is there a potential for human health impacts by cadmium at 300,000 parts per million? And I'd say absolutely. Unfortunately, you have to prove that. And that's a very difficult thing to prove because we live in a toxic world. So I think with the paparazzi, our first focus should be on false advertising, lead-free, nickel-free. But that's not going to go very far necessarily because those levels were so low, unless we by chance find one with a very high level of lead, which I don't expect we are based on the testing that I've done and that Tracy did. And so the question is, can we establish human health impacts from the high levels of cadmium? That's a question. That's an inquiry we all need to be in. Now, if you are a paparazzi associate, what do you call them?
A consultant or a rep, probably.
Okay. This is what you should do if you sell paparazzi jewelry. You should get a series of tests. You should ask your doctor for a series of tests today, when you hear this, the moment you hear this. Call your doctor, say, I may have had an unsafe level of cadmium exposure as an industrial workplace exposure. That's the bigger concern that might be provable than, oh, I bought a piece of paparazzi jewelry and I might have exposure from that. But what we can do is if you folks can get a blood test for metals, a hair test for metals, and a urine test for metals, and there are different types of urine tests, there's provoked and non-provoked. You probably want to get a non-provoked first and then a provoked one later. I think Doctor's Data does the hair and urine, and you can ask your doctor to do that for you. But I wouldn't just do it for you. I thought about this a lot last night in my dreams in preparing to talk to you. Because I wonder, like, what can these, like, if you test positive for cadmium, that has no bearing on where the cadmium came from because our world is so toxic. If you look on my website, which is leadsafemama.com, tamararubin.com, you'll see I have over 3,000 posts and pages, most of which is test results. Many of those things have tested positive for cadmium. So it's not like an unusual thing. And the company can say, oh, well, you got your cadmium exposure somewhere else, so you can't blame us. So the question is, can we determine human health impact? So I would start by getting those tests for you, but I would also get those exact same tests for everyone in your household. Because I want to know, is your level that's provable in one of these methodologies higher than your husband or your child or your roommate or whoever else is in the household, because you're touching and interacting with these pieces more. And again, that's not necessarily going to be provable as a causal implication. We're not going to be able to causally implicate the paparazzi jewelry as having caused your cadmium levels. But if we have 10 or 20 or 100 paparazzi consultants all test everyone in their household using urine, blood and hair tests for metals, and in every case there's some correlative association where the person who handles the jewelry and sells the jewelry in the household is high cadmium, but nobody else in the household is, then we start to have a data set that is interesting in terms of assigning blame and asserting that there's a problem. So I'm sorry, it's a lot of talking. Do you have any questions about that?
No, I think that's amazing information. I think a lot of people just learned a lot of things. It's also interesting that you mentioned that Washington has specific rules, because I'm very friendly with the AG's office in Washington, and I would love to give them some of this information and maybe they can look into it as well.
But they won't care if it's not sold for children. Okay.
Right. So that's what we got to do, right? We got to look into that stuff. We got to send that children's jewelry to Tamara. We'll get that all set up in the show notes so that you're able to contact her and get that stuff sent to her, get some of that testing done. And, you know, let's start creating a timeline.
Yeah.
Let's really figure out what's going on here.
Another problem is that, at least with lead, which is a good example, and the other metals, I assume is similar based on the reading I've done. Lead bioaccumulates in the body. And if you get a blood lead test, then there's a 30 to 45 day half-life window. So say you're getting a metals blood test, that'll tell you what your exposure has been in the last 30 to 45 days. So if you've stopped selling Paparazzi and you've put it in a box in your garage and you haven't touched it for a month, hopefully whatever levels you have, mercury, lead, cadmium, whatever they are, have started going down. So you want to do this like today, tomorrow, the next day, whenever, as soon as you can get this testing done, because if you test in a month or 2 months, your levels will go down. Now, I don't know if anybody likes the true crime dramas, but in the true crime dramas, they often test hair to figure out arsenic poisoning or other poisoning. So the hair tends to give more of a 3 month picture, or they can cut the hair up into 1 inch long segments and like see, okay, this was likely a month ago, this was likely 2 months ago. So that's another thing to do, is test the hair in segments. And again, I think that's more an investigative inquiry that should be overseen by someone handling the potential liability considerations. So what I would do is yank a couple of your hairs out. You want them yanked out by the roots. You want the root bulb, and put them in a little jar, baggy test tube to be tested later when we can say, okay, and write the date on the baggie that you pulled your hair out. And, you know, for fun, write down your date of your last haircut. So we know that this hair represents hair that was growing from your head from this period, and your hair was, you know, they can tell how rate of hair growth. That's just one way. And then if you do a urine test, there's a lot of scientific criticism about the validity of hair and urine testing. But what I'm finding is if you did have an exposure, your hair or urine will likely correlate, but there's not enough of a scientific body of research. Instead, Western medicine doctors tend to say, oh, well, hair and urine tests don't really tell you much because, you know, it's past exposure, and it's your rate of elimination, and it's isolated by certain people. Like, so what I tell people about hair and urine tests is get a hair and urine test now, stop touching or interacting with these products cold turkey, get another hair and urine test a month from now, and then 2 or 3 months from now. And if your levels have gone down, and the main thing that you've done differently is you stopped using or touching the offending, concerning product, then you also have more data about that. And it's expensive to get these tests done. Sometimes they'll be covered by insurance, sometimes they won't. Sometimes the doctor will call in the order and you can pay like $100 per test. You want to make sure, ideally, that it's overseen by a doctor in case you're trying to establish corporate liability for this sort of thing.
I've got this whole eating fancy while at home thing on lock with CookUnity, and you can join me by visiting cookunity.com or entering code MLM before checkout for 50% off your first week. I live in sort of a rural area east of San Diego, and so I don't really get to step out of my culinary comfort zone as often as I'd like to. And if you're a foodie too, you know how expensive exploring the local food scene can get and how hard it can be to find the time and the energy to venture out of your neighborhood. I love our small town spots, but it can get boring pretty fast. I've tried a lot of food services and meal kits, and by far, CookUnity is my favorite. While others can be labor-intensive or food-restrictive, CookUnity left me feeling satisfied, satiated, and smiling. You guys know how much of a workaholic I am. You listen every week. CookUnity got me excited to take a break and enjoy a delicious hot lunch from the comfort of my own home without leaving, and it was less expensive than a trip through the drive-thru. The meals were delicious, easy to reheat, and every single one of them was a hit that I would reorder. I love the variety, the flavors, and the fact that we can support local chefs. The rustic-style French beef ragu was so delicious. I paired it with some leftover garlic bread that I had from dinner the night before, and I practically licked the plate clean. If you'd like to support the show and join me in experiencing chef quality meals every week delivered right to your door, go to cookunity.com/MLM or enter code MLM before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code MLM or going to cookunity.com/MLM. I got my newest quince order in the mail. Want to join in on the fun? Visit quince.com/MLM for free shipping and 365-day returns. Y'all know I am a sucker for fashion in the worst way. I think most of you who listen know that. And from the second that I saw Quince's $50 Mongolian cashmere crewneck sweater, I knew that I needed one. I've never owned cashmere because it's always felt just out of reach. But it's spring, so we're cleaning out the old to make room for the new, and I'm upgrading my wardrobe with a new, super soft, lightweight, classic cashmere sweater. It is perfect for just about any time of the year and occasion. And I paired mine with some skinny jeans, and I wore it to all of the podcast industry parties at Evolutions this past week. It is a luxury essential at an unbeatable price. Truly, you are getting 70% off the luxury brands on 100% grade A Mongolian cashmere. Unreal. Quince's quality cashmere is incredibly long-lasting, it's 3 times as warm as wool, and it's sourced sustainably and ethically from goats in Inner Mongolia. And then it's ethically produced in China. Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. And coming from my past, I absolutely love to hear that. There's a reason that this sweater has a 4.9 star rating with over 11,000 reviews. It comes in 21 colors, 5 sizes, and it won't break the bank or your heart. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/MLM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/MLM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/MLM.
I think that's really important, especially anybody who feels like they've had any of the symptoms that we've mentioned in talking about any of this stuff. If you feel like, oh man, I've been selling paparazzi for X amount of years, I have thousands of pieces in my home, I touch this every single day, my children are in here. Like, you guys, as soon as this is done, call your doctor and make those appointments and get those tests as soon as possible. Like Tamara says, pull the hair out right now, put it in a Ziploc baggie. Don't let one day go so that half-life can start like decaying. Get it now.
And decay is used for radioactivity, so let's be careful about our speech. But yeah, that's the idea.
Right. I'm not a scientist. I just stayed at a Holiday Inn Express. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
And I'm a citizen scientist where I've had to learn on the job about science. And to the point where as we were talking beforehand, I have done presentations to the EPA. I have taught EPA employees about the impact of lead exposure. I have done presentations at national conferences where people from all sorts of public agencies come. I have 2 awards from the federal government. The first one was awarded by a consortium of public agencies at the National Healthy Homes Conference in Denver, and that included the EPA, CDC, FDA, HUD, and the U.S. Department of Energy. So, like, I've gotten these awards for being an advocate and doing the science, even though I don't have a science degree or a science background, because I'm so steeped in this that I know more about the comprehensive scope of impacts of heavy metals on humans from a consumer good interaction perspective than probably many people, many scientists and other experts. So
you're an honorary scientist here on this show.
So the other piece of this, and I'm trying to speak slowly and clearly and hopefully be able to edit around things, but the other piece of this is the concern is not for lead and nickel, right? Okay. So we just established that. My concern for potential exposure is cadmium, mercury, and arsenic. So forget about the lead and nickel. That's a false advertising claim. That's an administrative issue. My concern is for cadmium, arsenic, and mercury. So when you're looking at those tests, I want to know, you know, do they have cadmium? Do they have mercury? You know, and do they have arsenic? Now, the arsenic I have found is at much lower levels, in the 50 to 500 parts per million range, and it's likely bound in the metals, and I don't expect people to necessarily have arsenic poisoning from any of this. I think the cadmium and mercury are much more likely points of concern that warrant further study. And I am not saying you have cadmium and mercury poisoning from your paparazzi jewelry. I'm saying we need to look and see if you have any potential impacts from the cadmium and mercury levels in the paparazzi jewelry. And that's one other piece I wanted to mention in response to the video from the other night. So the testing that I do and the testing that Tracy did are, it's all about total content. None of that testing was migration content. So like how much is migratable? So she kept citing Prop 65. And Prop 65 more is concerned with how much of the metal migrates off of the metal in use, you know, off the metal, off of the object. So for example, if you have a brass doorknob that's made of heavy leaded brass and you do a dust wipe test on it and nothing migrates from it, then it's Prop 65 compliant as long as it's labeled that it has that metal. So there's a little in the weeds here about whether or not things are Prop 65 compliant, but the numbers that we have generated from this testing are not the numbers required to determine whether or not something is Prop 65 compliant. So she kept mentioning arsenic levels and numbers like 10 and 4.4. Well, that's migration concerns. And these are, so that testing hasn't been done yet. So all of the considerations that I'm stating are based on total content testing. So if you want to do migration testing, you're not doing total destructive testing. You're putting a ring in a solution that might resemble normal usage of extraction of metals. And I don't know what that would be, because when they do dishes, they're only looking at the inside of the vessel. They're not looking at the outside of the vessel. And you don't use a ring as a dish. So there isn't necessarily a standard for migration detection with a ring. So that needs some more inquiry into determine how they would see if these items are in fact illegal. To my knowledge, based on the testing that's been done, given these are products sold for use by adults, they are not illegal. It's not illegal to have an unsafe level of cadmium or mercury or arsenic in a piece of jewelry sold for use by an adult, because it's not regulated at all. And I do in my recent posts about the paparazzi jewelry, the one with the brown flower charm and the heart charm, that actually were things Savannah sent me. Those two items have a little chart in the post that discusses the limits, and there's no total content limit, even for children's items, for some of these metals. And the main problem is the antimony is not regulated at all. There's no total content, and I don't believe there's any migration limits. One of my more popular posts was about how I found antimony in plastic peanut butter jars at levels that I found concerning. So if you buy peanut butter from Costco, you have a potential antimony exposure from your damn peanut butter jar. So I think, you know, not trying to make a case for paparazzi people to argue, like the company, but they could argue, well, you got your antimony exposure from your peanut butter. And they might not be wrong, because, you know, that's a more likely source of exposure. It's ingestion. It's something people eat on a regular basis. It's consistent in all plastic peanut butter jars. And then in terms of cadmium, if you have Le Creuset cookware, it is coated with cadmium containing paints. If you have...
No!
If you have red dishes, like... there's that brand, I can't even pronounce it. It's like Washer Fuck. I don't know what that, but they have this line of dishes from William Sonoma. It starts with the W. It's made in Germany. I mean, if you have red dishes, either from Pottery Barn or from William Sonoma or from Crate and Barrel, if they're red or orange, they likely have a high amount of cadmium on the food surface of the dish. And if those have been used on a daily basis for regular meals, there might be cadmium exposure from those. So you won't be able to isolate and say, oh yeah, I tested off the charts for cadmium. It's my paparazzi jewelry, because you might have other sources of cadmium in your home. And that's where things get tricky and why companies can get away with this shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, sounds MLM-y to me. Like they know exactly what they're doing, and they know exactly what they can and can't get away with. And they really walk that fine line, and we're seeing it right here. Like the stuff that's illegal is not, because it's marketed to adults.
Yep. Yep. So the to-do list for the paparazzi people, the you all that are doing this inquiry, is get tested now, get tested a month from now, get tested 2 months from now. So we have, or, you know, if you don't have that much money, get tested now and get tested 3 months from now. We got to see if you have an elimination or reduction in your heavy metal burden through any or all of these testing methodologies. And if we can prove that 10 different people have this reduction in metals after not touching it, after having touched it for a long time, then there might be a leg to stand on in terms of potential health impacts. The problem is most of you, I would assert, did not get a test 6 months ago or did not get a test before you started selling this jewelry. So you don't have, I think the company's going to argue, well, we don't know if it's exposure from our product. And that's a common argument.
Right. MLM's like, how do we know you weren't filled with cadmium before you started wearing our jewelry?
And the truth is, and if you look up on my website, there's a few examples. If you look up urine testing or hair testing, there's a few blog posts that I've written where I discuss obvious concerns for specific metal exposure for the person whose urine test is shared. So, for example, there's one little boy who tested really high for antimony. And I went to his house and I used the XRF instrument and I found antimony in his pajamas, antimony in his couch, antimony in his pillows, antimony in his carpet, antimony in his bed. There was antimony in everything. And he was nonverbal and 4 years old and rolling around naked on the floor. So he was just like always exposed to antimony. So and then I had this session with his mom. She removed a lot of the concerning items and his antimony levels went down and he started talking again. Now, it was a shotgun approach where she's also doing chelation therapy and we also removed lead exposures from his home, but there was antimony in everything in his home. And then another family, they had the kiddo was 14 or 15 years old and autistic on the spectrum and he tested positive for arsenic. Well, this family was very wealthy and collected a lot of English and French antiques and they're dark wood stained, but you can't like refinish them because that, if you watch Antique Roadshow, you know that that diminishes the value. So you have to leave the original finish. Well, that original finish is wearing and deteriorating because it's 100, 200, 300 years old. And it turned out she had like 20 or 30 maybe antique pieces in her home that all tested positive for trace levels of arsenic. And so that boy that was high for arsenic was likely getting the arsenic from the antiques in her home. And again, trying to approach this scientifically, we said, well, if it's a dust-borne hazard, and we're talking about micro dust, then it would be in her filter of her air purifier. And so we tested the dust in her air purifier, and that was also positive for notable levels of arsenic. So there's a lot of other sources, you know?
That's, oh, wow. Geez. I mean, there are so many things to test. Wow. I'm like speechless. It's speechless. Your documentary left me speechless. Like everything. I mean, I messaged you immediately after and I was like, oh my God. And I have so many questions. It's just absolutely wild. I am so thankful for you and what you're doing. I did want to ask you though about Boo, because we've talked about Boo here. You did test Boo. Boo is closed now, but at the time it was saying, oh, this is the best way to remove heavy metals from your body. You just drink it, soak it, paint it, whatever. And those heavy metals are just going to leach right out of your body. Totally fine. But your test showed high levels of cadmium in the Boo.
Yeah.
And antimony too, right?
Yeah. Let's just, you asked me why I tested these things. And I just want to reiterate or talk about that briefly. I have a Facebook group that has about 15,000 members. I had, back in 2019, I had like 1.8 million readers on my website, and with censorship during the pandemic about, you know, censorship of health-related content, that's gone down a bit, but still quite a few, you know, this year I had about 800,000 readers and the year before 1.2 million readers. And so my readers, especially my regular readers, I have about 40,000 hardcore regular readers who come back daily, I think, not daily, not all of them, but a lot of them, like they, anytime they're going to buy something, they check out my website and they try and find something similar to find out if it might have toxicants and what my recommendations are. And I don't like recommending products because manufacturers are always changing their products and you never can rely on something being lead-free tomorrow that was lead-free yesterday. But I do give guidelines for people to purchase safer things. So the way my work works is that, I'm an LLC, a small business, and I'm not a nonprofit, but it's kind of run like a nonprofit in that it's a social impact small business. And my readers tell me what to test. They send me the stuff to test and they help pay for the testing and cover my costs. So far, my business is not making a living for myself, but the point is to get this information out there so that families can protect themselves by making safer choices by having information. So why did someone send me Boo? Because I'd never heard of that stuff before, but one of my readers said, hey, you know, this is happening. Can you test some? I'm like, okay, sure. So that I was sent Boo by 4 different readers, and I've got 5 samples altogether. Now I've got 3 samples up on the website. It also tested positive for cadmium, high iron, zinc, niobium, indium, tin, and antimony. And there's no correlative knowledge about the potential health impacts of those levels found in this product, okay? Because that hasn't been studied. And again, say you think your cadmium came from your paparazzi. Well, who knows? Maybe it came from your Boo. You don't know, because even though the cadmium level in the Boo was only 13 parts per million, cadmium toxicity when it's ingested and measured in parts per billion, and 13 parts per million is 13,000 parts per billion. And metals are usually toxic when ingested in the range of 50 to 100 parts per million. And so for context, water is considered unsafe for children to consume if it tests positive for more than 1 part per billion lead. And that's the American Academy of Pediatrics standard. And again, for context of interest, is that the federal standard for lead in water, at which they consider water coming out of your tap unsafe, is 15 parts per billion. So the doctors say it's unsafe at 1 part per billion, but the feds say, oh, it's okay up to 15, because it's not health-based. It's all, the federal standards are all based on what industry can achieve. So anyway, the big thing about Boo is that they claimed that there's this ionic charge that would help the metals bond with excretion and blah, blah, blah. Well, I've written about this a bit because of Earth Paste, the toothpaste. So Earth Paste toothpaste tests positive for lead. And they had a lead warning on the back of their Silly Lemon toothpaste that they were obviously selling for use by children and had googly eyes. And they were trying to sell it as the children's toothpaste. And it had a warning on the back, said not intended for use by pregnant women and children, but it was like brown on brown and really hard to read. And I have pictures of that on my website. So basically these companies don't, as long as they label it with a Prop 65 warning, then they were absolving themselves of liability. But in this particular case, they were selling it with an intended market of children. So as a result of the pressure from me and my readers, they ended up changing their labeling. So it no longer has googly eyes on their lemon toothpaste. But in the bullshit greenwashing from Redmond, who owns Earth Paste, the leaded toothpaste that they sell, and if you're using, you should stop using. That again, first off, that toothpaste tested positive for 11 to 15 parts per million lead. And in the bentonite clay substrate, the main component of the toothpaste. And so again, that's 11,000 to 15,000 parts per billion lead when the amount that's unsafe in water is 1 part per billion. And then the greenwashing continued where they're like, oh, well, you know, you don't use as much toothpaste as you drink water. I'm like, yeah, but even if you adjust for the fact that you drink more water than the toothpaste you use, but these kids are swallowing toothpaste and it's 15,000 parts per billion. And then I recently tested some more samples, and I believe that was in the neighborhood of 22 parts per million, 22,000 parts per billion in the bentonite clay. So all that is to say, they have, they're a prime perpetrator of this false information that there's an ionic charge to the minerals in their concoction, whether or not that's Boo or Earth Paste or whatever the fuck, and that it molecularly bonds to the lead in your body to help it excrete that lead, and that somehow the lead in the product or the cadmium in the product or the other metals in the product are not molecularly bioavailable to your body because of this weird, you know, assertion of ionic charge. So the funny thing is, not funny, the sick, twisted, horrible thing is that, and you're like on mute, you're like laughing, but you're not like you're being quiet, but I'm like,
oh yeah, I'm just sitting here shaking my head and thinking, what the ever loving fuck is happening in this country?
Yeah. So here's the thing. So a lot of these, and a lot of these are MLM products, but not all of them, supplements and things like that. They're saying, well, in Cooper 2009, there's this assertion that, you know, the molecular ionic charge and blah, 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 and it's not bioavailable. And so I Googled and I looked and I researched and I contacted Cooper 2009 and I tried to find this Cooper 2009 study that everyone's referring to. Well, the Cooper 2009 study that has, there's no Cooper 2009 study that has anything to do with human absorption or the lack of human absorption of ionically charged metals that happen to be in a clay-based substrate or dirt. Okay, there's no such study. What there is there's a study from 2009 from this guy named Cooper, who I think he's in Minnesota, and he studied how clay can be used as a filtration system to help clean water coming out of sewage plants to make it cleaner for re-releasing the water into the environment. Has nothing to do with human bioavailability. It's just a totally bullshit reference that people use that has nothing to do with what they say it has. But because they cite a study and people think it's real, they believe it. So that started this whole wave of, oh, ionic charge stuff. And I have not been able to find a scientific study that does prove that. So in there's no safe level of heavy metal ingestion. There's no safe level of lead exposure. You should never ingest any metals with the knowledge that lead is toxic at 1 part per billion in water, and lead is considered toxic at 50 parts per billion in fruit and candy, 100 parts per billion, because the reason they set higher limits on those items is because you're supposed to eat less dried fruit and less candy. So they have a higher limit than water.
Oh, wow.
So because these levels are set in the single and double digit, and in some cases, the highest level is 100, so 3-digit part per billion levels as being toxic, the fact that you have cadmium and boo at 13,000 parts per billion is fucked. It's crazy. Do you swear on your podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. We let it fly.
Okay, well, you know, and so I would want my findings for boo to be reconfirmed, because the studies I've seen for boo did not show cadmium levels at the levels I found. So I don't know if they weren't looking for cadmium or what, but I think that I want to retest some of the cadmium levels I found in the boo to see if, in fact, you know, lab testing confirms that. Because when you're talking about ingestible substances, you really need lab testing, especially when you're talking about double digit parts per million. You want to reconfirm with lab testing. I'm confident in my instrumentation, but given the application, the margin of error might be a factor. So I really want follow-up lab testing to determine cadmium levels in the boo, because then you definitely potentially have an exposure source. So part of the problem is I have people in my Facebook group, which is Lead Poisoning Prevention with Lead Safe Mama. And they're like, people will ask about something and then they'll respond with, oh, well, you'll be fine. And I'm like, no. That's not what this group is about. This group is about science. We're a science-based group. It just happens to have the word mama in the name of the group. It's not a mama group. My goal as a 52-year-old mother of acutely lead-poisoned children with brain damage from being lead-poisoned, whereas something I have to deal with every day, their brain damage and the impacts on them, and the other learning disabilities and physiological symptoms. My goal is to teach or help other younger mothers and parents, but mostly mothers, about 95% of my readers are mothers, to give you some science, to give you the scientific basis for making informed decisions for your family. Some people can't handle a science lesson. They're like, I didn't take science in school, or I did poorly in science, but it's really what we need to do as consumers. I always use the example of your car seat. The amount of freaking research you put into choosing that damn car seat and whether or not it was toxic and whether or not it was the best one and how safe it is, that amount of research needs to go into everything in your life. And if you're not putting that amount of research into the foods you eat, especially if there's supplements, into your home, into your clothing, I mean, once you choose something, then you've got that choice down. You've made that choice and you're comfortable with it. Like, I, like, again, I'm 52. I started wearing one brand of jeans 30 years ago, and I haven't had to make that choice ever again. So I found the jeans I like, and now they don't make them anymore, and I have to find new ones. But for 30 years, I didn't have to think about that again. I found the shoes I like, been wearing them for 35 years. I didn't have to think about that again. So it's not like it's going to take over your life to put a little energy into these choices. But if you have this certain thing that you eat or take every day, you really want to know, oh, okay, what's the science behind it? What's really the science behind it? Not what the marketing says. And so
absolutely, right? Like, find out, like, what are they saying and who's saying it? Is it Boo that's saying Boo's great? Because if that's the case, then maybe find someone else who's not related to the company and the product to also be making those really great, this is amazing claims. Because, I mean, follow the money, right?
Yeah. So with the cadmium toxicity in Boo, I think it's the same thing. I suggested people definitely get a test right away, see if their results go down over time, and thereby kind of scientifically compartmentalize the time period of exposure and the potential impacts of that product, which may or may not have been having negative impacts. I do my best to try and make the information accessible so that people can take actions. So this other point that I wanted to mention, we're talking about the bioavailability of cadmium, this whole BS about Cooper 2009, the fact that, you know, they're using fake science that has nothing to do. They're referencing a scientific study that has nothing to do with what they're talking about. This whole ionic charge thing is not proven, to my understanding, in the scientific literature. And if there is a piece of scientific literature that discusses that, I don't believe that it's applicable to what they're using it for. So that said, early on in my journey, I had a friend who I'm no longer friends with. She's a lawyer. And she might even listen to this because she's curious about this sort of thing. Her name's Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer, if you're listening. But she said to me, well, you know, you're getting upset about the presence of lead in things when, you know, not all lead is bioavailable. Why are you making such an emphasis on the total content of metals and products? You really need to be doing more rigorous work and learning what amount of that lead is bioavailable. And I said, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. And I did some more research and I learned that no matter what form the lead is in, it's all bioavailable to some percentage. So like one particular form of lead might be 80% bioavailable. Another particular form of lead might be 50% bioavailable. And then the lowest level I found was like 20% bioavailable. I'm like, given lead is one of the most toxic substances known to man, even if it's only 20% bioavailable, that's too bioavailable. So fuck you. So she was trying to say that I was creating alarmism, you know, being alarmist and creating, you know, and fear mongering and that sort of thing by simply doing what I do on my website, which is sharing total content, because what the total content I share is not necessarily bioavailable content. The question and the problem is, when I share total content levels, like, you know, arsenic, lead, and mercury found in vintage Tupperware that's been around for 50 years, and you're putting in the microwave to heat your spaghetti, no one's proven how much of that's bioavailable, and no one's proven that it's safe. And there's no one trying to prove it's safe, because the only person who would financially benefit from trying to prove it's safe is Tupperware. And they will most likely not prove it's safe. They will prove it's not safe. So no one's undertaking the studies about the degree of bioavailable of metals based on the total content findings for those consumer goods. So, you know, whether or not all 14,000 parts per billion cadmium in the Boo is bioavailable is a question. It's something that needs to be asked. But, you know, part of it probably is bioavailable. And is that worth a risk when it causes cancer? And when we have, you know, a huge amount of cancer in this world when we didn't previously. And a lot of the cancer, people dying from cancer, are people that grew up with industrialized processed food and products in their home. Like both of my parents died of cancer in the last 5 years. And they were both, well, on the younger side, like my mom was only 72 and all the women in her family lived to 90 before that. Like why did mom die at 72 when, you know, everybody else lived longer? Well, because she was that generation born in 1942 where, you know, they came up with white bread and they came up with Twinkies and they came up with all this, you know, processed mechanized things and better living through chemistry. And that's the generation that's dying of cancer right now, younger than their, you know, parents, younger than their, you know, the previous generation. And so if we can eliminate these chemicals from our life, we at least stand a better chance.
Yeah. You know, my dad actually passed away from pancreatic cancer at 61, born in 1951. And he was a big fan of like potted meat, you know, instant lunch type stuff. And I don't know if anybody could convince me otherwise that that was not part of it.
We have these health conditions. And the other thing I get a lot in response to my work, and I have a blog post that addresses all of these things. I hear from readers who talk to their parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles or friends or neighbors about my work. They say, well, you know, we're fine. We grew up with all that shit and we're just fine. So if you look up the words be fine, or I think if you were in my search bar, you'll find my post about that. And basically it talks about all of these medical impairments that we've learned to accept as normal for our society. And that, like, people are like, but I'm fine. Yeah, but I have diabetes. My grandmother died of Alzheimer's, you know. Yeah, you're fine. But what does fine mean?
Right? It's like, I'm fine, but I have all these neurological disorders and like my bones hurt when it's going to rain. Like, you're not fine. Those are not normal things. These are all like side effects of all of the shit that has happened way before we even were around.
And so that gets us to, you know better, do better, make safer choices for your family, investigate things, don't believe what companies say. The biggest piece of shit is if a product has a Prop 65 warning, it's not just bullshit. It probably is there for a reason. There are a few exceptions to that, but the company will say, oh, we just have to put that on there. But they wouldn't have to put it on there if they did appropriate testing and it was negative. And the only reason they have to put it on there is because either they didn't do appropriate testing or they did testing and found metals like in the Earth Paste toothpaste.
Right? That's so like funny for them to be like, we just have to put that on there. It's kind of like a law. It's like, it's only a law if your shit has that toxic stuff in it. If it doesn't, you don't need this label at all.
Right. And, or they haven't done the testing. So that's a big thing you hear a lot from companies. And I think, you know, the degree to which paparazzi might be taken down might fall within whether or not there was Prop 65 labeling only for products sold in the state of California. So anybody who's a paparazzi seller in California has documentation that these things were shipped to them in California and that they bought them in California. That's one angle. And because they apparently have no Prop 65 labeling, but also it's questionable about whether or not that was required. Although I assert that given the cadmium levels found, it likely is required. Again, Prop 65 is looking at how much can be migrating off of the product. I believe Savannah covered this in one of her videos, but you know, those, if you have a coated ring and it's coated with a chromium coating or a silver coating, like one of those things tests positive for silver, great. But that silver coating almost always wears off. And that's the other thing I talk about when I talk about dishes. The most popular posts on my website have to do with dishes because everyone has dishes. And the dishes regulatory standards, it's the same issue. They're only regulated for whether or not they're leaching lead or other metals at the time of manufacture. And they really don't look into what happens to those dishes 10 or 20 years from now with daily use when the surface coating comes off or the surface glaze is deteriorating and that glaze might have lead, cadmium, mercury, arsenic, or antimony. And, you know, that's when we're seeing exposures is people have been eating off these same dishes for 20 years and, or drinking from the same coffee cup that's high lead for even a year or two or three. Or also things that got past regulatory standards because they were sold as decorative items. And that's a big thing with holiday decor. You have Christmas dishes and platters and things that they're considered decor. So they're not right. They're not tested as they would be if they were dishes.
Okay. So I'm going to throw it back to the beginning when we were talking about your film and some of the stats that I wrote down when I was watching it, that lead paint was banned as a residential substance in 1978, but only residential. Like you're saying, you can still get decorative things. They use lead paint in like anything but residential, basically. Like it's still out there everywhere.
Yeah.
That's insane. Because people are like, wait a second, lead paint is banned. And I'm like, only in houses and only since 1978.
And only to 600 parts per million. So you can still have lead paint. Well, that's not exactly true. They changed the regulation. They lowered it to 90 parts per million. So the paint in your home is likely below 90 parts per million lead or negative. Most modern paint is negative for house paint because they really cracked down there. But then, you know, like in the last month, I found 7 baby bottles painted with lead paint. And
it's wild to me that a baby bottle would have lead paint on it, knowing that lead poisoning is really going to be most detrimental to young children going through their developmental stages. And you throw lead paint on a baby bottle where their little tiny baby fingernails can scrape it off, get under their nails, they stick their hands. What the fuck is happening?
Right. And here's the other thing too. I don't know if you remember, you said your baby's 10, right? But I was old school. I'm kind of a Luddite. I don't believe in having a bunch of appliances. So a lot of people have a baby bottle sterilizer. I used to boil my bottles. So I would stick the bottle, make a big pot, stick the bottles in there, boil them and hang them out to dry afterwards. So when you're, you know, they're not necessarily looking into the leachability of the lead paint because it's not on the inside of the bottle. And they're not looking into the potential deterioration from sterilizing or boiling on a regular basis, which happens and causes the paint on the outside to deteriorate. So you have these painted markings, the logo markings, the measurement markings, any decorative markings on these NUC baby bottles specifically, and also the Lansino baby bottles, the Muma that are for a breast pump. These glass baby bottles are painted with lead paint and it may or may not deteriorate, but they're not being tested because it's not the interior. They're an exemption from the leach testing standard because the paint's on the outside. And when we brought this up to NUC a couple months ago, I mean, I've been on NUC now for 3 years that I've been harassing them and they still are painting with lead paint. The thing is, I got to say, if you're in the state of California and you bought a glass NUC baby bottle, it's probably lead free. But anywhere other than the state of California, it probably has lead. And that's the same thing with the glass milk bottles. And again, you can look all of these things up on my website. Just go to leadsafemama.com, tamararubin.com, and put glass milk bottle in the search bar or glass baby bottle or a brand, you know, put NUC or Avent or whatever in the thing, and you'll find out my XRF test results for that item. But the big deal for me too is these lead painted glass milk bottles, where only in the state of California are the milk bottles lead free. But all over the country, we're importing from this one company in Canada called Stanpak. They're doing all of the, if you look, your pick up your organic dairy, local milk, grass fed, blah, blah, blah milk from the glass bottle. You'll look on the bottom, it says Stanpak. They're all made by that company. It's all painted with lead paint. And the only ones that don't have lead paint are the dairies that I called and said, hey, you're painted with lead paint. And then they demanded lead-free paint. And the company, Stanpak in Canada, has lead-free paint because they're making it for California. They know about it. And
that's what's so wild. Like, why not just blanket the whole thing? Just make all of it lead-free. Like, I don't understand why you're having this whole subset of like, this is for California. And then the toxic stuff's for everybody else. Just, I feel like it would be easier to just make all of it non-toxic.
Yeah. And then the big problem for me is that I can't get the news to pay attention to this. And I have emailed the New York Times. I've emailed CBS This Morning. CBS This Morning did a piece on me when I reported lead and fidget spinners, so they know my work is legitimate. I have contacted all these major news outlets about these concerns and nobody's picking up the story. And it just seems ridiculous to me because the science is legitimate. The findings are legitimate. My findings are replicable, science-based and accurate, as provable in this paparazzi incident, they did testing, found similar results to my testing. And when I say similar, I also want to clarify one point of that is the levels that they found were much higher in the cadmium. And that's because with the XRF test, I have to point it at a certain part. And there's other like parts that don't have cadmium in the reading. So the reading is generally going to be a little bit lower than if you did digestive testing. But you know, the levels for the cadmium were in the same range, hundreds of thousands. The levels for the lead were in the same range, under 100. The levels for the nickel were in the same range, under 100. So, you know, in the same range. And so these are replicable science-based readings of common popular products. And everyone should be fucking outraged that you can buy lead-painted baby bottles on Amazon today. And then the company, NUC, their response when we filed with the CPSC, their response was, oh, those bottles weren't supposed to be available for purchase in the United States. I'm like, what the fuck? This was a mom in Tennessee who bought the bottles on Amazon, had them shipped to me in Oregon, and they definitely were purchasable in the United States, but that shouldn't matter. And the thing is, like, they're selling these to families all over the world. And since we haven't been able to get the United States response, I'm working on a global initiative where I'm having mothers in Australia, New Zealand, England, and other countries buy these baby bottles, and then we're going to do a summary of these that we can buy lead painted baby bottles in all these different countries, and we're going to submit that to the United Nations. I don't know, and see what they say. It's just like, why am I a mom of lead poisoned kids doing this work? Why isn't our government doing this work?
That's an excellent question. Why am I having to be the one to expose MLMs? Why is the government protecting them? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. It's horrible that we have to, you know, become victims and then speak out to help other victims not become victims because our government is compliant. Because like we said, follow the money. You know, I know we've got big pyramid on this end. I know you guys have big lead on your end. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, it's depressing. And it's easy to get caught up in that. And I also want to say that a lot of people don't want to look at this because it's too depressing. But I also want to say that you can easily find non-toxic choices out there for your family. And that's been a focus. It's funny. It's very frustrating. Younger people tend not to read. And so I'll write these long posts about all these safer choices and how to find safer choices. I even made a video that shows people how to search my website. And I put at the top of the video, here's all the way to find lead-free choices. And not only do I make recommendations of lead-free products, which again, like I said, I hate doing, but what I do is I give a guideline for each type of product and how to find the lead-free version of that product. So no matter where you're shopping, you say, okay, here's Tamara's 10 bullet points to make sure that the pots and pans are lead-free. Here's Tamara's 5 bullet points to make sure my mugs are lead-free. And you don't need to buy the products I recommend. You just need to follow the guidelines. And there are lead-free options for everything out there. And there are cadmium-free options for jewelry. And, you know, I mean, for example, Claire's. We talked, a woman asked about Claire's, and Claire's had this big thing 10 years ago about cadmium in their jewelry, because first they got nabbed for lead in their jewelry, and then they went and reformulated and they replaced all the lead with cadmium. So all this jewelry that was lead-free was super high cadmium, and then they got nabbed for that, and they were super fined. I don't know the details, like, they were cited by the CPSC and they made a standard change. And I have tested recent Claire's jewelry and it's free of lead and free of cadmium. So it can be done. You just need pressure from consumers. And also you need consumers to know to be choosing the non-toxic choice for these things.
Wow. Your work is incredible. I am so happy that you came on the show. Thank you so much for all of your incredible knowledge. I am definitely going to be having you back as things come up to talk about toxicity and the problems that we encounter. You're incredible. Thank you so much, Tamara.
Thank you. Yeah, and people can send me stuff. Usually I ask they contribute if they can to help cover the cost of the testing. And right now we're trying to pay off a $15,000 loan to get the instruments that I use refurbished. And, you know, there's a lot of costs involved. Also, I have a legal team of 10 lawyers. Well, only one of them is active right now, but you know, the legal fees to defend my work have been astronomical in the last 5 years. So any contributions are welcome, but if you can't afford a contribution and you want to send something in for testing, you know, send me a note with your contact information so I can get back to you, and I will post about it and do the testing as soon as possible. If people want things back, I can send them back to them. But I think that, you know, I need your help, other moms out there, parents, people, in knowing what's important, because I had no idea what this paparazzi jewelry was. I was so lucky. I have a family that I work with. The one of the moms, her kids were poisoned, and her sister have been sending me, have been contributing to my work for a long time. And her sister sent me in these initial paparazzi jewelry pieces years ago. And I wouldn't have known to test them without one of my readers sending them in and saying, you should check these out and see what the concern is, because they must be lying. And lo and behold.
Absolutely. Well, I will throw all of your links in our show notes so everybody can find you really easily. And if anybody would like to donate to Lead Safe Mama, we will throw that in there as well. You know, this is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be exposing people and educating. This is just the beginning of 2022. Like, we are just on this and we are not stopping.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast and my advocacy at The Real Roberta Blevins. You can find all of the links to the social accounts in our show notes. And if you just listened to that incredible story and you thought, oh my God, I have a story just like that that needs to be told, hit me up, therealrobertablevins@gmail.com. I would love to have you on the show to share your story and start your journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Huns.